Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
In their bestseller Game Change, reporters Mark Halperin and John Heilman captured the full drama of Barack Obama's victory over the Clintons, John McCain, and Sarah Palin. With skilled reporting and unparalleled access, Double Down is their new book, which picks up the story in the Oval Office, where the president is beset by crises both inherited and unforeseen. The name of the book is Double Down, Game Change 2012. Mark Halperin and John Heilman are co-managing editors of Bloomberg Politics, and they join us this morning to talk about Double Down as well as the 2014 midterm elections. And it's a great pleasure to welcome you both to the roundtable. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. So as we talk on this eve of the midterm elections, it's not possible to look at what has happened over the past 2 years since writing about the election and where we are now. What do you think it is important to take from these past 2 years?
Well, this is John Heilman here. You know, we when we wrote in Double Down at the end of the book, you know, the President Obama, you know, having won a huge victory in 2012, a victory somewhat against the odds. He felt that it was more important for him to have won in 2012 than it was more important to him personally to win in 2012 than even in 2008. You know, he had thought that his victory would break the fever, and that Republicans now would feel compelled to work with him. And what we've seen over the last 2 years is that, if anything, the absolute opposite has happened, which is that there's been less cooperation even than there had been the previous 4 years, which is saying something. So we've had a very, very ugly couple of years. Very little has gotten done. The economy has improved a little bit, but not a lot. And that tells you a lot about where we are heading into the midterm elections, which is that, you know, the president is at a low ebb in his approval rating. The country still thinks that the country's on the wrong track more than the right track. And that has created the context in which a lot of Democrats are endangered on election night on Tuesday.
So given the president's remarks in 2012, how much of that was wishful thinking on his part? And how much opportunity was there really to change things? Do you think that's been squandered over the last 2 years?
Well, I think his critics would say that he didn't try hard enough, both in terms of reaching out to Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill, but also that he didn't move far enough to the center, that he was so wedded to Harry Reid and liberals in the party that he wasn't willing to reach out. The president rightly points out that a lot of conservatives were opposed to him even before he got sworn in, and that the strength of the Tea Party movement in its control over House Republicans made compromise impossible. It's very tough times in which to govern, but I think there's no doubt that the president has not, whether through his own fault or the recalcitrance of Republicans, he's not achieved what he wanted to in terms of changing the way Washington works, and that's a frustration for voters all across the country.
Mark, talk a little bit about how President Obama and his administration doubled down on this and were able to change the game and win that election in 2012.
Well, the president did a pretty remarkable thing. He looked at where he stood at the end of 2010 after those last midterms and recognized that he was going to be in a real fight to win re-election, and spent time trying to figure out how to frame things up. He anticipated he'd run against Mitt Romney, but he wanted to frame things up as basically his vision of the economy versus the Republicans, knowing that a referendum on his own economic record would probably not lead to re-election. But that comparison, that side-by-side, you know, as Joe Biden likes to say, don't judge me in comparison to the almighty, judge me in comparison to the alternative. And that's what the president set out to do in a pretty methodical way with his political team. And they won not as easily as he won the first time, but pretty handily for a guy who was saddled with a very weak economy.
And as far as opportunity goes, the question is, why do you think the president is not adopting much of what he did in 2012 to help the party and to help his approval ratings in this election year?
You know, the president is, he's trying to help his party the best he can. And, you know, he's a lot of the things, the lessons, in addition to the thing that Mark just talked about in terms of framing up the argument in 2012, the other thing that his campaign did extraordinarily well was to figure out how to change the electorate and get the coalition of the ascendant, which is how a lot of the people around him talk about it, non-white voters, single women, young voters, to get those voters to come out in large numbers, larger numbers than they would ordinarily, and they built this kind of incredible turnout machine. A lot of those lessons of how the president won in 2008 and even more dramatically in 2012, those are being implemented very much by Democrats in 2014. So there are things that the Obama political operation and insights and methods that they developed that are very much at the core of how Democrats are trying to hold on here in these Senate races and in gubernatorial races across the country. The president himself, you know, because he is as unpopular as he is, and particularly unpopular with undecided voters and particularly unpopular in a lot of the red and purple states where there are endangered Democrats, the president can't really help them in some ways because those candidates really don't want him to come there because he's unpopular. And so he's a little bit handcuffed in terms of his personal ability to go out and help those guys and gals because of the fact that him coming to the state to help them in the ordinary way that a president would, it seems, would do more harm than good. And so he's now has to kind of sit on the sideline, be frustrated, and just hope that the methodologies of his campaign will be able to help them underneath the radar to hold on to their seats.
It does seem, though, in recent years, in recent political years, in recent presidents, both Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, that this has sort of been the way that it's been, right? That you win re-election, and yet when you hit that 2 years before your term is up point, you don't know whether you should sit home and how much help you can be to candidates across the country.
Well, there's no doubt that that's been the pattern with the last two, although Bill Clinton in 1998 did campaign. Maybe he's always the exception to every rule in terms of politics. But I think it's a troubled time for the country politically. As I said before, there are these broad divisions that none of the last three presidents have been able to bridge over, and all of them wanted to. And the challenge is how you stand up to your own party in a way that doesn't betray your principles and doesn't create new problems for you politically while still being able to reach out to the other side. And like I said, all three of them, to a large extent, failed in that project.
Both of your books really gave us an insight into the Obama administration and to the president himself, both Game Change and this book, Double Down. Do you see this as a man and a president who has changed drastically, or are we seeing a person who has been very steadfast in the way that they lead and govern, and what we're seeing is the response to that?
We see a president who's changed almost not at all. There's no doubt that being president, there are things that do change you, I think, you know, and especially with respect to the kind of weight of the responsibility, for instance, of sending American sons and daughters off to war. And the moral weight of that, you know, has a profound effect on these presidents. But in terms of style, in terms of how he approaches the practice of politics and governance, the president's very much exactly the same guy who got elected in 2008. He's not a guy who reaches out beyond his inner circle very easily. He's not a backslapper. He's not an arm twister. He's a guy who believes in the power of reason. He's more interested in policy and in governing than he is in politics. Funnily enough, he's very good at politics, not that interested in it. He's not that great at governing, but he's very interested in that. So there's a fundamental kind of paradox, but that's always been true with Barack Obama. Very even temperament, very even keel, not someone who gets caught up in the day-to-day, what the media is focused on, doesn't get rattled by the attacks of his opponents, even when they're very fierce. And that kind of that temperament, his disposition, it was part of what helped him get elected, and it's the extent that he's achieved big things that are largely the function of that temperament and that approach, but his flaws are also rooted in that same temperament and approach. Like everything, all the positives and all the negatives kind of flow out of the exact same set of characteristics.
I mean, you asked the question in the afterword of how a man with such extraordinary communicative gifts so often has been unable to persuade even half the country to support his policies. And I guess the question I have is that President Obama, or is that a new political culture that we're going to see in the future, no matter who gets elected in 2016?
The culture is powerful, but leadership is a powerful thing, too. And the president has shown remarkable political skills. He got elected twice as an underdog, arguably both times, even as an incumbent in that process. He does communicate really well, and he is passionate about what he believes. But for whatever reason, partly the times and partly, I think, how he's chosen to try to build relationships. He's not been able to really fundamentally change the political culture. Now, you can't take away from him universal health care, dealing with the auto industry, the re-regulation of the financial sector, and the stimulus bill that passed early in his administration, almost all with only Democratic support, but still major achievements. And the question is, for his legacy, I think, as much as anything else, is going to be around the economy. Has he fundamentally put things in place, and will he by the time he leaves office, that allows some of these longer-term economic problems, these structural problems, to be fixed? I think the jury's out on that, but it's certainly the case that he will end his presidency having not changed the culture of Washington, having spent maybe over half of his presidency not really getting anything of significance done on domestic policy because he couldn't change that culture.
There is an afterword to this book, and you both look at the 2016 elections and how that picture has changed drastically over the 2 years since the writing of this book and the book coming out a year ago even. You can both take a swat at this question as to where we are now and what do you think the next 2 years will bring us in the lining up of the presidential candidates and how that political climate that the president has cultivated will impact that lining up.
Well, the first thing to say is that, you know, the 2016 election will start next Wednesday, effectively. Once we get past these midterms, you're going to see a lot of activity. There is a big field of potential Republican candidates ranging across the ideological spectrum. We don't know exactly who's in, but you have people who are very mainstream Republican conservatives, people like potentially Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, who are very much, as I say, mainstream conservatives. You have others much further to the right, like Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, all taking a look at this race. You're going to have a big crowded Republican field. How that will shake out, we really don't know. But it's what's odd about that is that there's no real Republican frontrunner right now. And usually by this time in the cycle, Republicans pretty much know already who their nominee is going to be. On the Democratic side, you got Hillary Clinton, who's, you know, first among equals and the likely Democratic nominee. And, you know, it's hard for an in-power party to win three consecutive presidential elections. So that's the history and the precedent would suggest it would be an uphill fight for Hillary Clinton. On the other hand, the demographics and the way the country has changed and the pure potency of Hillary Clinton, both as a candidate and a symbol, gives her makes her the front runner, even though the structural factors are kind of in favor of the out of power party, the Republicans. They should be the ones lined up to win this race, but I think, you know, she is in fact the most likely next president of the United States.
You start off the afterword talking about Chris Christie. How much do you think Bridgegate hurt his chances?
I think it hurt it in the short term for sure, because he was lined up after re-election to be the Republican frontrunner, which is a strong position to be in, as John suggested. Historically, the person who's the frontrunner early on becomes the nominee. I think that really raised some doubts, along with some of the stuff in our book about what Governor Romney's team found when they looked at Governor Christie's background. In the minds of donors and of Republican elites who play such a big part in the early stages of this four-year process of trying to figure out who's the right horse to bet on, the U.S. attorney is still looking at it. There's still a grand jury looking at it. I don't see Governor Christie himself being indicted. I still think there's a possibility that some people around him might take a fall for political actions, illegal actions, maybe not directly related to the closing of the bridge lanes, but some of the other things that have come up as the rocks have been turned over. If he can survive that, though, I think voters, for the most part, won't care, although everybody can understand the notion of traffic lanes being shut down. If there's no proof that Governor Christie himself knew about it, I think he can move forward. He's got some other problems as a candidate, but I think he's one of the stronger candidates, assuming Bridgegate doesn't take him down.
The name of the book is Double Down, Game Change 2012, with a new afterword. It is just out in paperback from Penguin. Mark Halperin and John Heilman, thank you very much for joining us this morning. I do appreciate you sharing your expertise with us.
Thank you.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Double Down, Game Change 2012, published by Penguin. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.